Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Born in Sioux City, Iowa, Russell grew up in a family of musicians and started playing drums on his father's knee at five. Both grandfathers were professional musicians. His mother's father was a boogie-woogie piano player, and his father's father was a jazz trumpet player and big band orchestra leader. His father was a jazz drummer who played with the Ink Spots. His two brothers were a trumpet player and a sax player, and both played drums as well. His love for drums drove him to pursue his calling. At 12, he started playing gigs at his grandfather's nightclub, and by the time he was 19, he had played with Chuck Berry. The following year, he played with Muddy Waters. He moved to New York City and studied with Roy Haynes, as well as attended jazz workshops in Harlem. From 1974 through 76, he toured and recorded with rock legend Tommy Boland. In 1977, he studied East Indian Rhythms with Colin Walcott at Naropa Institute, Boulder, Colorado. From 1979 through 81, he played with jazz legend Freddie Hubbard, and in 81, played with Bo Diddley. 1982 through 90, he toured with Jose Feliciano. He recorded for the Laverne and Shirley Show under Bennett Salvi, the Merv Griffin Show. Under Mort Lindsey, musical direction between 1983 and 85 during downtime from touring. Later, he also recorded for the Northern Exposure TV series. The independent film Stanley's Gig also featured his talents on the soundtrack. He has worked and recorded with a large variety of artists, including Jimmy Smith, Billy Preston, Robin Ford, Tommy Boland, Jeff Berlin, and many, many more. He's got three solo albums to his credit, Tommy Boland Tribute, Dream Street, and Fortaleza. Please welcome drummer Russell Bizet to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Russell.
Hello, greetings, Ray.
You've done a lot of stuff,
man. Thanks for having me. Well, it's a lot of time.
you're also, is it Lazarus Music Productions? Is that your company?
Yes. My production company.
So what goes on there?
Well, mostly my own stuff, but I work with a couple of artists. There's a young lady, actually, she was one of my drum students. She's now concert violinist, Annelle Gregory, and she's done some great stuff, and got some stuff coming up working with her currently. My girlfriend, her name is Ellen Cusack, is a singer, and we're working on her CD.
Right.
Some projects like that.
Are you mainly doing stuff on the production side, or are you? Is there a new album coming out or anything like that?
Actually, not my own, but Ellen Cusack,
right.
Her CD's coming out. We're working on that. I'm going to be producing it and playing on it as well. And with Annelle, we're just kind of talking about the direction that she wants to go in and just figure out how we're going to present the music
so,
with her, and I'll be producing that.
What kind of genre of what kind of genre are we talking about? Are we talking about jazz or?
For singer, yeah, it was going to be jazz standards,
right?
And then with Anil, we're not sure yet. It's going to be because when she studied with me, she studied playing jazz as a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's switched her rhythmic concept to playing violin.
Oh, wow.
And she's playing mostly classical music. She wants to get back into playing more jazz now, which she, her mother's a Japanese koto player, one of the, if not one of two in Southern California.
Really?
And I've worked with her mother over the course of, I don't know, I guess we, we have a band called East West, and we've been together for over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, it'll be in the jazz genre, and I'm not sure whether it's going to be swing, or whether it's going to be like, groove jazz, soul jazz or something like that.
Right. Well, time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, it'll work out. Yeah.
Now, do you also do drum clinics, or are you just a 24/7 kind of teacher?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Do clinics. I've been doing some clinics at Cal State San Marcos and SDSU, San Diego State University. I've done some there. Also in Denver. Because I lived in Colorado for like 8 years, and I still have connections to the Colorado area.
Right.
And there's a music conservatory in Sioux City, Iowa, and they're doing some great stuff. And actually, I might be doing it. I've done a clinic there before, and they're talking about maybe having me back again this summer.
It's cool. So many legendary musicians now are doing clinics online, which is really neat. You can do it on Skype. Billy Cobham he's a kind of a friend of mine. I've interviewed him several times, and he does all these clinics, and he has this thing that he does once a year for musicians, and they all get together and get to play together and stuff like that. But I think it's wonderful that you guys are doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way to, and especially with jazz, and I don't know Billy that well, but I met Billy when I moved to New York.
Right.
And actually, he's like one of my all-time favorite drummers.
Me too. Mm-hmm.
And just to reach, I think he's living in Europe or something like that now.
Yep, he's in Switzerland.
Around the world, with his expertise and his knowledge,
yeah,
and his technique and things like that, and passing it on.
Well, of course, he's got the connection with you, with Tommy Boland,
Yeah, and actually, I met Billy, was in New York, he was in a band called Dreams,
mm-hmm.
And, Billy needed a sub, and I knew the singer. His name was Eddie. I forget his last name. Anyway, he asked me if I wanted to do it. It was like a casual, what they call casual party.
Right.
Party gig in Long Island. And so, I met at their loft down in the village. And Billy Cobham, the drummer. And he scared me to death. I mean, he was playing when I walked in the door, and it was just like, oh my God,
Yeah, he's a great drummer. He really is. And I love the Spectrum album, and of course Tommy's on that. One of my favorite albums.
Yep.
Yeah. But man, I don't know of anybody that came with more of a musical background than you. Holy cow.
Well, and I, being a teacher, it's like I get kids come in that their parents are musicians, or a parent was a musician, or the grandparent was a musician, and to just kind of been fascinated by how what they come in with, the thing that you can't teach is just like they want to learn, and
But the club owner was that was your dad, right?
It was my grandfather.
Oh, your grandfather, Club 51.
He had a place because that was his first place.
Right.
It's Club 51 and 7-Eleven Club, which is both in Sioux City on West 7th Street.
Do you know some of the performers that he had in his club?
I'm sorry?
Do you know some of the performers he had in his club back in the day?
Oh, God. That was a really long time ago.
Yeah.
And I remember some guys that would come through Sioux City. Either they were on tour or they were somewhere nearby.
Right.
Okay, so he was friends. Johnny Otis was one of his good friends.
Oh, wow.
And there was a tenor saxophone player out of Omaha, Nebraska, who they played together in Count Basie's band.
Mm-hmm.
And Preston Love. And Preston lives in Omaha. He would come and play with, and he would bring Stenzie Hunter with him. Was a bass player. Stenzie was bass player, was with on some Paul Butterfield records.
Oh, yeah.
And just two great musicians, and being a young kid and being able to be around and play with the caliber of musicianship that those guys had, it was like made a big impression on me.
So when did you start playing drums? How old were you when you really got into it?
When I really got into it, so my dad was a drummer and my grandfather
right.
had a band. They played together, and sometimes my dad would make the gig, and my grandfather, who was responsible, he bought my first drum kit. It was really encouraging, and hired me to sub for my dad. And I believe I was like 12 when I first started gigging, making a few dollars. And my grandfather, after the gig, he would, hang out with all the older guys and stuff like that. And my grandfather would, at the end of the gig, he'd pay everybody. And he would give me my pay, and it was folded up in the palm of his hand, and he'd reach out and he'd shake my hand and mm-hmm. put the money in my hand. So, no, it was my grandfather. I was just about to put the money in my pocket, and he talked to me like, you better count that, you know?
That's funny. Man, growing up with so many legendary, players like that's incredible. That's a great story. I mean, you should write a book about, your parents alone. Your parents and your granddad,
Yeah, there was some great times growing up, and it was very entertaining. Grew up in a fun family. There was always music going on in the family.
Yep.
And my mother didn't play an instrument. She didn't sing, but she never complained. There were four drummers in the house, and someone was always playing.
Wow.
And I can't ever remember her complaining about it.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
That's why everybody got so good at it.
With my students' parents, that they don't have a drum set yet. It's like, well, you're going to need it. Think about getting them a drum set.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, yeah. And then they hesitate. It's like, oh, yeah. That means a lot of noise in the house, We have electric drum sets now.
I know. Isn't that something?
A lot of parents go for that because they don't want to hear your kids practicing all the time.
You know, I play guitar. My son can play drums. He doesn't ever play that much anymore, but when he does, he's really good at it. Don't you think you got to have something in you to become a drummer? I don't think anybody can just become a drummer. Don't you think it's like a special talent that some people do have?
That's true. Yeah. It's something, unless you have no coordination.
Right.
And no rhythm whatsoever, then it's impossible.
Exactly.
But if you have some coordination, I always ask a kid, does he play sports or anything like that?
Right.
It gives me an idea of, are you coordinated, you know? And you can work with coordination. You can work with a little bit of rhythm, you know, then it's systematic kind of thing. But if you have none of that, then that's not for you. Drums is not for you, you know?
Right. Yeah, because I guitar I can play, but when I get behind the drums, it's like, you know, it's just not clicking, you know. And I watch my son, and he picks it up so easily, you know. Yeah, it's amazing.
You know, I believe that you control what you do rhythmically on the guitar. You can transfer that to drums. It's just you're using arms, legs,
right,
wrists, and fingers, you know.
Who was, I was going to ask you about Chuck Berry. You got to actually play with Chuck Berry, huh?
Yeah. That was, I was living in New York. There was a friend there back in Sioux City. Everybody knows Rick Archer. This was back in the day. And Rick called me. I think Rick had something to do with promoting Chuck Berry. And instead of getting this great gig, it's with Chuck Berry. It's like, yeah, I mean, so I drove from New York back to Iowa. The gig was in Iowa City, I believe, and had one rehearsal with Chuck. And I mean, his rehearsal was like, when I lift my foot up like this, it means we'll do this change, and when I lift my arm up like that, it means that we'll make this change, and it was like, that was the rehearsal, and then he walked out. And and then, we played two shows.
Right.
With that kind of rehearsal, it was just like, you'll hear it, you know. He was just giving cues.
Right.
And it's like, y'all know my music, so I'm just going to cue you, get dynamic cues and stuff like that. That was the gig.
Huh. So he was pretty easy to work with, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't talk much around the band or stuff like that. He'd come in,
right,
do the rehearsal, do the gig, and he was gone.
Huh. Man, that should be your headline, you know? I played with Chuck Berry. How many people can say that?
Yeah, probably a bunch.
That's incredible, man.
Yeah.
You know, one guy... go ahead.
He would come in different regions of the country.
Uh-huh.
He'd travel without a band. So there's probably quite a few guys.
Oh, okay. So he'd pick up people wherever he was touring or playing?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. Huh. That's kind of like the orchestra deal. You know, when you get orchestras backing you up in a band, when you travel to a city, you get the orchestra that's local, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of guys did that of that generation. Bo Diddley, another one,
right?
Who I played with, picked up a band. Actually, we did a bunch of gigs with him though, but it was in one venue,
right?
Guys like that, they would just come through town, pick up a band, two players, and do a show. Pretty much, you get some good players together, and you know, they know that music, or they've heard it, or they know what to do with it, you know, kind of thing.
You know, I've done this.
Just back them up. Let them do their thing, you know.
I've done this a long time, you know, interviewing people and you know, with music my whole life. And I did not know people like Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley picked up bands. I just thought they traveled with musicians.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. I knew they did that with orchestras, but not in a band. That's something. I mean, I wonder how many auditions they go through just to put the band together.
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, I was recommended for both of those,
right,
gigs, and there was no audition. It was just you showed up at rehearsal, and then you're doing shows.
That's pretty cool.
Luckily, like, everyone was competent, you know, players and stuff like that, could play the music. And played in the genre of the music, but
yeah,
you're just kind of backing them them up, they're the star, and let them, you know, do their thing, you know, and you're just backing them up, you know.
It's kind of like being a session guy, right? Like the, in a way.
It is,
like the wrecking crew, or, you know, I just had one of the guys from the Funk Brothers, Dennis Coffey, he was on the show a week ago. He played on all those Temptation songs and Edwin Starr, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I'm, you know, big fan of Funk Brothers, big fan of Wrecking Crew.
Right.
One of my mentors is Carol Kay.
She's awesome.
In the Wrecking Crew.
Yep.
And I met her in Colorado. She's actually, it was just her birthday just a couple of days ago. I talked to her, and she's still playing. Writing her method books that everybody in the world is studying in, and she was very helpful with me when I moved to Los Angeles and introduced me to some of her buddies, which happened to be some of the Wrecking Crew, you know, Bon Johnson, Roland Batiste,
we just lost Hal Blaine. Hal Blaine just died,
You know, and I had become Facebook friends with Hal Blaine
just
a week or two just before he died on Facebook. And it was like, oh, man, you know, getting a chance to talk to Hal Blaine, you know, through Facebook and stuff like that. And he passed away a week later.
That's something. So when did you meet Tommy Bolin?
So we grew up together.
Really?
In City, Iowa. It was like, about a month apart in age, and to say being a small community, you know, everybody knew everybody, and especially even smaller with the music community. So everybody that was playing music, we all knew each other.
Right.
Tommy used to come to my grandfather's club because it was the only jazz club in town. Quite a few guys that were interested in that music would come down to my grandfather's club, and my grandfather always let him in. You know, we weren't of age, but that's how I met Tommy, and jamming somebody's garage or something like that. Never really played the band with him until, you know, much later. But when I lived in New York, Tommy was, I don't know exactly who, maybe Tommy was with, still with Zephyr or something like that, or in between. I know he had his own band, Energy. He would come to New York periodically, and we both had mutual friends, the Palanini brothers.
Right.
And we all hang out together, and Tommy just said, "Why don't you come join my band?" And in Colorado, he's like, "I don't know anybody but you in Colorado." And he was always just, "Don't worry about it, just show up." So, so I did. It was a good move. And moved to Colorado, Boulder. He got me a spot on somebody's couch. And that's how I ended up playing with Tommy there. And he was the only one his girlfriend's name is Karen.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go by his house every day, and would just, he had a music room. We'd sit on the floor and just listen to music all day and just talk about music.
Yeah.
Which was great. And back then, I mean, that's how we learned about music, was we shared music, you know. So you'd hear stuff that you probably weren't listening to, that somebody else was listening to, and that's how you, you know, broadened your scope of, you know, different genres.
Right.
Music history, stuff like that.
It's pretty cool. You know, Trace has introduced me to so many people from the Colorado scene, you know. The guys from Barnstorm, from Joe Walsh's Barnstorm, Joe Vitale, you know, and Kenny Passarelli, we had him on the show. We did a Tommy Bolin tribute with Kenny and Joe, which was pretty cool. And you must know, do you know Eddie Turner?
I do. I've known Kenny Pesarelli.
Uh-huh.
I just met Joe Vitale last summer and Ken Turner.
Eddie Turner?
Actually, I have a friend, Ken Turner, up here. Eddie Turner.
Right. Eddie Devil Boy Turner.
Both of them last year at the Tommy Bowling Festival.
Yep. It's pretty cool, you know, and I know the guys.
Yeah, so now we're all buddies. Yeah. We're buddies
awesome.
Now. Keep in touch with Facebook and stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe we'll see a future band there forming, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they threw it up last year. Also, Stanley Sheldon, who was with Tommy all those years.
Yep.
And Stanley is one of the coolest guys that I've known for since the 70s. And he's still making great music and doing well.
Yeah, he's been with Peter. Yeah, he's been with Peter Frampton for a long time, and now Peter's going to be retiring, you know, off the road, you know, because he's sick.
For a year, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Yeah, I had Stanley on the show too, he's you know, he speaks Spanish perfectly. He took Spanish studies or something like that in college. And traveled, I think, to Mexico and South America, and a very interesting guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yep. But yeah,
I've never gotten a chance to, because he had mentioned that he was, because I, you know, put Jose Luciano.
Yep.
And a couple other Latin artists, and traveled all over Mexico, South America, Central America, and absorbs, you know, some of that music. And also, Jose was from Puerto Rico,
yep.
So we go to Puerto Rico a lot and just absorb salsa music, you know, merengue and some of the Caribbean stuff that we picked up and love that music. I would go here in every country that I was in, and I would go speak out the folk music. Because that's kind of the essence of how their music sounds and how it's evolved from folk rhythms, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm half Cuban, man.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Know all about the
rhythm.
Yep. You know the first concert I ever went to was Jose Feliciano and Curtis Mayfield back in 1971.
Wow, two of my favorites.
Yep, but I love Jose, man. I've always loved his music. I think that's so cool. That now you went on the road with him, right?
Yeah, for 8 years.
Eight years. Wow, what was that like?
It was great. I mean, working with Jose, got to see the world.
Yeah.
Growing up in Sioux City, Iowa, and I remember my parents got divorced and feeling funky, and I bought that album, Jose Feliciano's Light My Fire album, and I played that every night, and then I bought some of his other records, and I listened to Jose Feliciano because it gave me comfort, and so years later, in Los Angeles, a friend of mine was a percussionist in his band, and I guess at that time, Jose was looking for drumming, so when you come in audition. So I went to the audition. I knew all of his music backwards and forwards. So I got the gig. And just playing with him and getting a chance to know him and also getting a chance to sit with him one night and just tell him how much that he meant to me, you know. We were really good friends. Traveled the world. I saw the entire world with Jose and all these great experiences and frightening experiences.
Mm-hmm.
We were down in South and Central America, like through the 80s, and a lot of the promoters were cartel, which was Pablo Escobar.
Huh.
And some crazy, crazy, crazy times and some great shows. I had no idea how accomplished a guitarist that really was, and we'd go to some cities, and I'd seek out a jazz club that was one in particular in Vienna, Austria, and I would go there every year that we were there, and so I got to know some of the guys in the band, and they'd always invite me to come and sit in, and I told Jose that I was going there, and he said, oh, I'd love to come with you, you know, so he was like, yeah, Jose, so I took him, and he said it, he's a great jazz player, I mean, that just blew my mind.
Hmm.
And he knows tons of tunes. It doesn't matter what kind of music it is. He just absorbs this music. He's really an incredible guy. If he meets you once, he never forgets you. He never forgets your voice. And yeah, he's very. He impacted my life and my musical experience working with him.
Yeah, he's incredible. What a guitar player. You know, he's
yeah.
a great guitar player, and I followed his music for a long time. And my mom used to love. My mom is, you know, she passed away, but she's was Cuban, and you know, we grew up on a lot of Celia Cruz in the house. So
yeah.
Jose was one of our favorites as well. And my favorite song was always Susie Q. I love the way he sang Susie Q.
Yeah. He loved to do covers his way, you know, and just the way he would. Sometimes when we were on tour, he would listen to the radio, and in his room just before the show, and then he would want to play a song that he heard on the radio. We'd never played it before.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like he'd want to play it. I was like, Jose, let's not do that. But it was like he would insist upon doing it.
Uh-huh.
Somehow he'd pull it off. Most times, you know.
I don't know, man. It's kind of close. I kind of like his version of Light My Fire better than The Doors. You know that?
You know, I agree with you on that. That's just us, I guess.
I guess.
But, yeah, I do like that version better than the original version.
It's more, it comes more from the heart, you know? It's,
yeah.
Wonderful! You know, you're so lucky that you got to that experience with Jose. That's incredible.
Yeah, and the guys that I worked with,
uh-huh,
were all like alumni. You know,
right?
We can all tell the same stories, and somebody will remind us of, well, this happened. It was like, it's almost like sometimes I'll tell my friends some of the stories, and they'll go, yeah, okay, you know, and then talk to some of the guys that I was on tour with, and they would tell the same stories.
That's funny. Yeah. What's he doing lately, you know? Do you know what he's doing lately?
Well, he lives in Connecticut with his wife.
Okay.
And son.
Right.
I think he has two kids. One, his son is now, like, his tour manager.
Oh, wow.
I understand.
That happens a lot, yeah.
I haven't talked to Jose in a while. He was through town here in San Diego, mm-hmm. and I was working. I wasn't able to go, but a couple of friends of mine, I sent them, got them backstage passes and stuff like that, and so they got a chance to hang out with Jose for a little bit.
Yeah.
And Jose's manager. So, you know, he's still out there. He's still playing. He's still working.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I've always wanted to get an interview with him, but haven't been successful. Maybe he doesn't do too many.
You know, he does.
He does?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll keep trying.
I'll put you in contact with his manager.
Okay, that'd be awesome. I mean, I'm a big fan of his from way back, my whole family, so... And now that I know you...
That would be a good interview, because he's a hoot, you know?
Yeah.
Loves to joke, and he's a very funny guy.
I've interviewed Trini Lopez, who was a friend of Jose's. He was a great interview, yeah. Trini was a good, really cool guy. And another guy that I admired a lot, I think you played with, is Billy Preston, right?
Yes.
I love Billy Preston, man. He was one of my, again, one of my favorite guys.
Mine too, and again, it was an audition, and got the gig with Billy, and we hit the road. We did a like a coast a tour through. We started in New Orleans, Los Angeles to New Orleans, then all the way through the deep south, all the southern states, all the way up the eastern seaboard up to New York, and then into the Midwest, and then the Southwest, and it's the longest tour of my life. But
wow,
just looking over at Billy and going, oh man, that's so impressive. I mean, it was like incredible, you know, feeling.
That's the fifth Beatle, man.
Sorry?
That's the fifth Beatle.
I know.
It really is.
Yeah. The fifth Beatle.
What year was that when you went on tour with him?
Let me see. Like 91, 92, something like that.
Because
I know I went to Japan
right
in 90, and so it was like when I came back, it's like 92. Something like that.
What are the all-time classics? I mean, I love all his, you know, top 40 hits and everything, but him and Syreeta Wright, Born Again, oh my gosh. That was, you know, and I love Syreeta Wright. What a voice on her. It's, you know, it really saddened me that both of them passed away, you know?
Yeah. He was a great songwriter. I mean, I was like, didn't know that he wrote those songs. You know, he wrote a lot of great songs.
He did. Yeah, I miss his fro, though. I loved his afro, you know, and he had the best fro in the world.
It is.
It was like perfect. that was kind of his trademark, you know.
Yeah, if you see some of the early pictures,
yep,
he's got this huge fro, you know. I saw a video, actually. I think I saw it on YouTube, and actually, it's a song that he wrote called "All That I've Got."
Mm-hmm.
And it was taped on some music show, you know, that they used to show, like, in the 60s.
Right.
I would imagine it was the 60s, it's just the fashion at the time and the way they danced and stuff like that. It seemed like 60s. But what a great performance. And Billy has the fro, and then he's a hell of a dancer and a great tune, All mm-hmm. That I've Got.
Yeah.
Good chance to check that out.
I will. I'll check that out. I saw him he live with George Harrison. I think it was back in 74. He was in George Harrison's band, and another guy, you know, Tom Scott was also in the band from the LA Express.
Right.
And yep. And then I saw him, he played with Ringo in his All-Star band, too. He was, you know, because of course he was really close with the Beatles, all those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, he had great stories. He told me some of the stories about playing with the Beatles and also the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he played. He did play with the Stones. Yeah, he did play with the Stones. I forgot. I saw the Stones, too, and he was there also. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. Man, you got to write a book.
Well,
you got some great stories.
If I knew how to write, I would.
All right.
I could put it to music.
You can always get a ghostwriter, you know.
Yeah. My girlfriend, we talked about that and stuff like that. Maybe I should, or maybe I will at some point, you know.
You did some stuff too with the Tonight Show and Merv Griffin Show.
I did. Well, I did Tonight Show with Jose Feliciano. Bill Cosby was took over for, you know, Johnny Carson
that night,
that particular show.
Right.
We did a lot of TV. The Merv Griffin Show. I was. The musical director, Mort Lindsay,
mm-hmm.
Well, I played with his son. His son had a studio, and that's one of the studio musicians. And Mort hired me to fill in for John Heron on the Merv Griffin Show with all those guys, which was pretty intimidating because they were all like the top session players, you know, in LA.
Right.
And did some other TV shows, worked in the Murray Shirley show, just kind of fell together. It was like when I first moved to LA, actually, and was working at a studio, and it was that session crew that we got that gig.
Right.
It was Dennis Salvay was the arts director there.
Did you meet Ed Shaughnessy from Johnny Carson show and from his band?
I did, and he let me play his drum.
Oh, wow, cool.
Which was great. And so during a show, we're playing, I'm looking down, and Ed is sitting right there by the drums, and he's like, you know, which was great. It's like, don't screw up. He had the biggest set of drums, and they were open, they weren't dampened or anything like that. Had this huge sound, great sounding cymbals. It was funny. It was like, I wonder what Ed's doing between taking. And so there's a big mound of cigarette butts there on the, by the drum throne, you know.
Uh-huh.
Magazines and stuff like that. Oh, so that's what Ed's doing, you know.
Did you talk to Doc? Was he there that day?
No.
No?
I don't recall Doc being there.
Yeah. Maybe it was, Tommy Newsom? Maybe he was there replacing him that day.
Yeah. I mean, I knew because I was in a band with a great guitarist, Cal David.
Right.
And, Cal had a band called The Dream Band, and, I was going to Santa Monica College at the time and playing in Cal's band, and it was Joel DiBartolo and all these guys who were in the Tonight Show band that were in that band, and Steve Madeo was with a bunch of people, but one of my favorites was he was with the Paul Butterfield Live Band.
Yep.
The loudest trumpet player I've ever heard in my life. And that was like going to school right there, just like playing with those guys. And then seeing them at the Tonight Show and seeing them on the gig. And that was their bread and butter. That's what mm-hmm. they did, you know, every night.
Yeah. That's a pretty good gig.
It was a great gig.
Did you do some session work on albums and things like that as well?
I did. I did studio work in L.A.
Right.
There, we did everything from, you know, some movie soundtrack stuff to publishing demos. It was back when actually people would use the rhythm section to record all this stuff. Now, with everything, all studios were in-house now with synthesizers and stuff like that, drum machines, and it's kind of getting back to live musicians now, but that, back then, in the 80s, there was a lot of studio work, and worked with a bunch of people, doing session stuff, a lot of singers, songwriters. Worked with, had a band with, Michael Ruff, great songwriter, mm-hmm. wrote a bunch of great things for, Bonnie Raitt.
Yep.
And we had a crew, David Schwartz, who's the bass player, who's now, he is the, writes a lot for, movies and TV shows, and actually he is writing music for Northern Exposure.
Right.
Show. So we did, you know, a bunch of stuff like that. Great experience to learn how to play in the studio and learn how to be a side man
mm-hmm.
and learn how to be a session player where you're a color in the picture, not the picture, you know?
Right.
Kind of thing. You learn how to play your part and that it's important.
That's a good gig, huh? Being a session man? I mean, it's got to pay decent, and it's,
yeah.
I guess,
I think every musician relishes playing in a studio.
Right.
Because it's the perfect conditions, you know. You can hear everything.
I think I had a friend of mine who passed away, Joe Lala. He lived in here in Tampa, Congo player. He did a lot.
Yeah, I know Joe Lala.
Did you know Joe?
I didn't know him. Uh-huh. I know people that did know him and played with him. He spent some time in L.A.,
yep.
Where I know him. Also in Colorado, too.
That's right.
I know him for quite a few years.
That's right, yeah. Joe was a great guy and did a lot of session work as well. And,
yeah.
You know, played with a few bands. Yeah, I was in his house and I saw his gold albums, gold records. Pretty cool. Cool stuff.
Yeah. So, you're in Sarasota, Florida.
Yep.
Traveled to there, played in Sarasota. One of my really good buddies, Liz, is from Sarasota now, has a management company, manages, Bob James, Larry Carlton, people like that.
Oh, yeah.
But, he's always trying to get me to move out there to Florida. And I just like that. You would think you guys would have this, like, once every day, like a torrential tropical storm, you know.
In the summer.
Yeah. It was like, man, what working musicians, how do they deal with that, you know?
Uh-huh.
Loading their gear in, you got your tuxedo on or whatever, you know?
Well, it's just during the day. Yeah, just during the day. We got a lot of musicians here, you know. That live
here. That's what I understand, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because my daughter's in Colorado now. She's up in Keystone.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, and my in-laws are, not my in-laws, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law are moving to Colorado from Virginia. So, I don't know, I may end up in Colorado, you never know.
You know what, it's not a bad move, that's a good move there. Colorado's a gorgeous state.
It is gorgeous.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my blood is thinned out from Florida. I don't know if I could take the cold weather anymore. That's the only problem.
You'd have to think about that and really weigh that out, you know. And get used to the smell.
I know. And bears.
I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. What? You're in California, right?
I'm in, yes, North San Diego.
North San Diego. That's a nice area.
It's great.
Yeah.
I live in a town called Encinitas, and it's like yoga capital.
Oh, really?
But it's very cool here. The weather's like gorgeous most of the time. We had a bunch of rain this winter, and it made California just bloom into this gorgeous green state. A lot of flowers and stuff like that.
Yeah, nice.
We just had a 10-year drought, so everything was like brown.
Huh.
You know? And now it's back to this lush, green, picturesque-looking state again. So it's great. It's a great spot.
The only thing about California that worries me is the fires, you know? And, you know, I was telling you before, BBS Radio, you know, we broadcast from California, and the station burnt down because they were in Paradise. The whole town went down, and now they
were
in Paradise, California.
Yeah, okay.
And they moved. Now they're in Lafayette, and but Paradise, the whole town went up.
Yep. Yeah. I was in a couple of fires. Yeah, we have to deal with that there.
Yeah.
You know, like we've had this 10-year drought. I mean, everything is just like so dry. And,
right.
There was all this fuel. I mean, and it's just going up like crazy. I lived up in the hills there for a while, and a couple of years back, 4 years back, and big fire, got evacuated twice.
Really?
Pretty scary.
I mean, it's hard to stop, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah. Pretty helpless feeling.
Yeah. I like you, I do love jazz. and more or less into the fusion. You know, I love Mahavishnu was always, you know, John McLaughlin was one of my favorites. But I also love the Crusaders. They were an awesome band. You know, of course, Billy Cobham, all of Billy's stuff, and Return to Forever, and, you know, the list goes on. I love all those guys. Who are some of the guys that you kind of admired, I guess, in that field?
Well, all those people that you just mentioned. And, really. And, so, you've been listening to the same kind of music.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of fusion, and I like listening to the Brecker brothers and Michael Brecker and everything he was on. Great tech player. There's a young drummer now, Brian Blades, that I listen to and his group. Charles Lloyd, he's not a fusion guy in the sense that, well, like Return to Forever or something like that, but kind of has a fusion, but he comes more out of the bebop era.
Right.
Kind of thing. And he's still out there playing. Some of the fusion groups got. I was at a gig and, they were playing music, between sets. And it was a Cuban band, but it was like, I didn't know who it was. And I asked someone, it was like, who is that? You know, it's just the music was so great. The playing was so great on it. And he told me it was a band from Cuba. I can't remember the name of the band, but it's, oh man, it was great. I like some of the stuff that's coming out of Cuba. And so the great Cuban musicians. I listen to a lot of different stuff. I always go back, actually, I was just listening to Chick Corea, Return to Forever, just last night. Kind of go back to that stuff. Mahavishnu was one of my favorite bands back in the 70s. Billy Cobham, love Billy, and all the stuff that he does. Some of the fusion drummers, there was a guy, you might not remember him, but his name is Sunship, a drummer.
Okay.
He was born and raised in Los Angeles.
Right.
He worked with McCoy Tyner and
a bunch
of the jazz artists.
Yep.
A phenomenal drummer. He passed away some years ago, kidney failure or something like that. But, and he lived, he had a cult following. In Los Angeles, everybody knows Sunship. His name is Reggie Theus, I believe.
Okay.
They called him Sunship. He just had this wacky thing, this spiritual thing. I'm sorry, it wasn't wacky, but how he would approach the drum set through this spiritual thing that he was into, and the way he played, and the way he created his solos, and incorporating sounds and different sounds and stuff like that, not just playing rudiment technique stuff. You know, it was really great. Lenny White, another great drummer. Harvey Mason, one of my favorite drummers. Joe Sample was friends with Joe, that loved Joe, he loved all the stuff that he did. He was a big Jazz Crusaders fan, and got a chance to do a gig with Joe, but just be friends with Joe, and show some of my gigs and stuff like that. He played with one of my buddies, Rob Mullins, Walt Felder was in the band. With that great tenor sound that he had, you know, so big jazz fan, love fusion stuff, love straight ahead stuff, love bebop, love swing, and I think there's a future for jazz, although they say, you know, it's dying out, but they've been saying that for at least a good 10 years or so, maybe.
Right. Well, you could kind of say that about rock and roll, too, in a way, you know? So
that's what I heard.
Yeah.
I heard jazz was doing better than rock and roll. Record sales-wise.
You know, there's nothing better than going to a smoke-filled club listening to jazz. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, every movie in the world, you know, has old movie. You know, that's the perfect scenario.
Yeah. Everything, the music, it gives you, it creates this atmosphere.
It does.
Feeling,
it does.
Kind of thing. That's what's great about music.
How about Buddy Rich? Were you a fan of Buddy Rich?
You know, I was, and I was like, Buddy came and played my hometown, Sioux City. I was like, oh man, Buddy, gotta go see Buddy. So me and some of my friends, and they were playing at some club, went to see Buddy Rich. They played a set, and we were maybe 3 out of 10 people that showed up at the gig, and Buddy played a set. He took a break and never came back.
Really? That's amazing.
So, yeah. So I was like, well, that was my big opportunity, you know.
Wow.
Great drummer, great technician.
Yeah. I heard he was a tough orchestra leader. I mean, he'd come down on his guys if, you know, they didn't do the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. He was tough. He was tough on his musician.
Right.
But what a great player. I mean, he demanded, you know, he had big demands on his band and the players in it, stuff like that. From some of the stories, I've played with some guys that were in his band,
mm-hmm.
That had some great stories about Buddy, you know, there's some hilarious stories. There's even a tape that has been passed around from when he was on his tour bus. And he's berating his band. That was hilarious. It's hilarious. You've never heard it. It's out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious.
Classic
Buddy Rich.
I think I heard that. I did hear that. I heard that tape. Yeah. So you and Tommy must have played together then, right?
We did. Yeah. I played in his band for a couple of years.
Right.
In Colorado.
Because he was a pretty good fusion guy, too, right?
Oh, yeah. He was all in the fusion.
Yeah.
I mean, he was not just a one-dimensional guy. You know, a lot of people, he's mostly known as a rock guitarist.
Yep.
But he was like, so before those guys like Lee Ritenour and Mike Stern and some of those guys that are known as jazz players, Tommy was the pioneer of jazz rock fusion
mm-hmm.
guitar playing.
Yep.
And he happened to play with some great jazz players. It was Billy Cobham, which was one of them. They were playing with, like, Eddie Gomez, who played with Bill, bass player, played with Bill Evans, Gene Perla, John Hammer, Jeremy Steig.
Yeah.
He's only with those guys on the East Coast, and that sort of got him the session date with Billy Cobham. I mean, I always wondered, you know, had Tommy lived, what he'd sound like now.
Exactly, yeah.
Doing, you know.
Yeah, just like Hendrix, you know. You wonder what Hendrix would have been doing now, because he was going off in different directions as well. You know, Hendrix might have been doing fusion.
Those two guys, what they accomplished and the music that they created in a short life was incredible.
It was incredible. Yeah, I miss all those guys, man. That's one reason the music isn't there anymore today, because all these guys are gone.
Yeah.
You know, all these great, you know, pioneers.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I saw Tommy, I saw him in Deep Purple, and I saw him with the James Gang And it just so happens, every year, my family, we used to take a vacation to Miami and stay at the Newport Hotel. And that's where he passed away, in the Newport.
Yeah.
That's kind of strange. All the hotels, you know, that's the one I stayed at. We stayed every year at that hotel. It's a cool hotel. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's such a shame, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we all felt that.
Yeah. And, you know, I hear his parents were wonderful people, too.
You know what's really cool, though, is Tommy's got this huge cult following.
Right.
Around the world.
Yeah.
And what Johnny's doing with the Tommy Dolan Music Festival every year.
Right.
And the people, it's become this family of people that come from music and that remember Tommy and his music. Every year now, and I've been a part of that for at least now going on 5 years.
Yep.
Sure. Every year it's like an incredible feeling, you know, and almost feel they have a big picture of Tommy on the back of the stage. It's sort of like he's looking at what's going on, you know, hearing the music, stuff like that. It's like his presence is there. It's a pretty cool thing. It's a pretty cool thing that he lives on, you know, for his music.
Yeah, Johnny sent me a bunch of his music, tons of tapes and stuff, CDs from Tommy, which was really, really nice of him to do that.
Yeah. I mentioned this guy, it was Tommy and I's mutual friend, Philip Palladini. Well, Philip, they lived in the city when we were young, and then they moved back through Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And so, really good friends of mine, really good friends of Tommy's. So, Philip moved from New York to Los Angeles, and he had this place that was up in the Hollywood Hills there. And that's where Tommy and everybody, the spot to go after the club school was to Philip's house. Well, Philip, and it was like a who's who of musicians that would show up there.
Right.
And they'd have jam sessions. So it's Tommy playing with a who's who from Bob Marley. It's like, what? Tommy and Bob Marley? and all these different people. Well, Philip had hooked up. Unbeknownst to everybody, because Tommy didn't want to record anything, but Philip did record that stuff. And there's some pretty cool stuff. Philip passed away 3 or 4 years ago,
really?
Possibly. But I think Philip got those tapes to Johnny Bowen.
Mm-hmm. Did you... Well, I guess you see Johnny every year during the tribute to Tommy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is he still with Black Oak, Arkansas? Is he still playing with them?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Yeah, he was with them for a while.
He was with them for quite a while.
Yeah. And, of course, Jim Dandy's at those Tommy Bolin festivals, too.
Yeah.
Another nice guy. He loves to talk. Jim Dandy Magrum. He's a really good guy.
Oh, he's a character.
Yeah, he's a character.
Yeah.
He's the real deal, man. He's the real deal.
I got to know those guys after, you know, seeing them every year.
Uh-huh.
We stayed at the same hotel, and I got to know, really got to know the bass player, George Hugan, who is a great bass player. George would show up at all the jam sessions. Stuff like that. It's just a player you love to play. Got a chance to, you know, talk a little bit with Jim Dandy and stuff like that. All great guys. I've seen them, actually, I'd see Johnny. We're playing with them out here in the area. I was going to see Johnny, of course, you know, and it was also with Black Oak, Arkansas.
Right.
So, yeah, I heard quite a bit of that music.
Yeah, those guys are the real deal, man. When they're saying they're from Arkansas, they're from Arkansas.
Right. Yeah.
Russell, do you think there's any chance of you putting another, maybe a band together or a trio or something like that? Or?
Well, I have trios that I do put together.
Right.
To do some club work and stuff like that. I did a trio CD. I did another one with, it was more like a quintet kind of thing. My most recent project was a project called Fortaleza with my partner Rob Mullen. And, kind of in between the stuff, I'm not doing any trio stuff right now, but I will be doing that coming up here.
You're a great drummer, man.
Mostly freelance thing.
Yeah.
Do a lot of freelance things being a side man right now, so like no pressure, you can show up.
True.
Do the gig, you don't have to deal with, stuff.
Yeah, I loved your Tommy tribute album. That was excellent.
Oh, thank you. That was my first CD project, and I wanted to dedicate it to Tommy.
Excellent album. Did a great job.
It was an honest project.
Uh-huh.
So I made my mistakes and just kind of learning how to record and produce and stuff like that. That was my first project, but I've gotten good feedback and it sold pretty well.
Yep. Russell, here's your final question, and it's a question I ask everybody. I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? And you worked with so many people.
Well, okay, so it's always been something that I wanted to do is like play with Miles Davis.
Yep. I get that.
Loved his music, love it still. Always will.
Yeah.
If I was on a desert island and I had deserted island and I had one record, it would be kind of blue.
That's a great album. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Coltrane?
Absolutely. Yeah. Coltrane. There's an album I listened to. It was a 4-album set. It was called Leo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever heard it. It was so intense, I couldn't. I yet to this day listen to all 4 records.
Really?
It was so intense. He was just like, oh man, that's like what came out of his horn.
Yeah.
Was like he had to. He could. I mean, he did that 4-album set. And it was what was possible, and what was possible was like scary, for him. All his other records were a little tamer,
right?
As intense as a tenor player that he was, but it was a little tamer. But he had like 3 or 4 more gears, that he could go to.
Yep, Billy.
That was Lou.
Billy Cobham, he actually played with Miles, which is really cool. And Coltrane was one of his favorites. I think he even mentioned him.
Everybody's favorite. They've got to be, if you're into jazz, if you're a music student, I mean, it's got to be your favorite. I mean, that's like...
Yep. Miles was an interesting character, wasn't he?
Yeah, so the story goes. I met him once, actually.
Did you really? Did he did he have that raspy voice?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
And my friend that I told you that from Sarasota was managing Miles and Long Beach Jazz Festival and invited me.
Mm-hmm.
Was backstage. Miles' band was on stage. Miles was standing in the doorway of his trailer there, their dressing room. So I was like, oh man, this is my job, so I don't know, but I'm taking a chance. But he was very nice.
That's good. Yeah, it's important when your heroes are humble and, you know, I haven't, all the interviews I've done, you know, thousands, I haven't had one bad egg yet. I'm very lucky.
Yep.
You know, everybody's been very cordial, very nice, and when your heroes are nice, it means a lot, you know? It really does.
It really does.
Yeah.
Especially if you're doing anything that, like, work with them or you're working with them in any context, that they're a nice person, it just makes the experience much better.
It does.
You don't always get that from everybody, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't like this guy so much, you know?
Yeah.
Just because of their personality, their attitude, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I'm very fortunate because a lot of the guys that I do interview now, in the past, they wouldn't have given you the time of day in like 30, 40 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
But now they're, you know, like grandfathers and they get to chill and, you know, like they like to reminisce.
Right.
So they'll talk about anything, you know? Just like you, man. You're very open, you know, nice guy, good guy. You know, it's a pleasure to talk to you. It really is.
Well, likewise too, Ray. And I really appreciate the opportunity.
Russell, is there anything else you'd like to promote or talk about? Did we cover what you got going on?
Pretty much covered it. I've got, you know, some projects that I'm working on right now, upcoming.
Okay.
I don't have anything. Anything right now that I'm working on, although there's some stuff in the works that I got recently contacted by, there's a small record label in L.A. that called me and want to add me to their label and do some stuff.
Oh, good.
And so we're just kind of in the negotiation stage and
awesome.
Kind of thing to start working on some music.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I've got...
That's a good little opportunity there. Yep. And give me something to do.
I've got a...
looking for stuff to do.
I've got a book coming out. It's in, I'm in the process of finishing getting all the, permissions for it. It's called the Rockstar Chronicles. And I've got lots of interviews in there, tons of, you know, recent interviews. And I'm going to do a series of four books probably. So we'll add you on, one of the series. Once I get closer to the next series, and I'll give you a holler and, see if you like how the interview turned out and everything, and we'll add you in the book.
Very cool, Ray.
Yep, because you've been very much part of the music scene, and you've done some wonderful, wonderful things, man.
Well, thanks, and thanks to Trace, right?
Trace is a great guy, man.
Trace has just been such a great guy.
He's hooked me up with so many people. He is helpful. He's a real good guy, yeah. And thank you so much for being on the show and all the great music, and I hope to see you in Florida.
Okay, hope so, Ray. And we're Facebook friends, and so we're going to stay in touch, and I really appreciate it. Thanks very much, Ray.
Thank you, Russell. Take care, man.
Okay, you too.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. For more information about Russell Bizet, visit www.russellbizet.com. www.myspace.com/RussellBizet, www.reverbnation.com/RussellBizet, www.cdbaby.com/RussellBizet, also www.supernaturalsymbols.com/artists.htm. Very special thanks to the wonderful Trace Keane for arranging this interview with Russell Bizet, and of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com, and please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com, and I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on PBS Radio, Station 1.